Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast with your host, Adam Emmert.
Why use gaffer's tape when I can use duct tape, which is stronger and more water resistant?
And Brandon Schultz.
Doesn't it make sense that the Golden Girl cereal would be blue?
Go Hawks!
You're on a quest. This is episode 224 of the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, joined by my good buddy, Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Good to see you this raining, Friday morning?
Yeah.
They all start to blur together, dude. All I know is it's close to game day. I'm happy that it's here. I missed not having the Seattle Seahawks in my life last week, and I'm really looking forward to this game against the Detroit Lions.
We get to go into Detroit this week and play in on some turf that Russell Wilson has yet to win on.
Is that a true fact?
Well, yeah. Russell's only played there once his rookie season, and they lost 28-24.
Okay.
And then I think they've only played the Lions, what, two other times? The one game that we were at in 2015 where Megatron almost scored the winning touchdown, if not for Cam Chancellor.
You phrased that completely wrong. Where Cam came back and saved the day and punched the ball out and caused a turnover. Yeah, not that Megatron almost... No. Cam came and put on his cape and saved the day. That's how that's...
And then there was the playoff game where I feel like we crushed him.
Yeah.
We have the wins where it counts, and now that Russell Wilson's not a rookie anymore, he can get his win on the opposing field that and have one more stadium that he's conquered.
That's funny. So basically what you're telling me is that Russell Wilson is 3-0 against the Lions when he's not a rookie?
Well... 2-0, right.
2-0, right. Okay, there you go. Perfect. Stats don't lie. This is a slam dunk then. Seahawks won this game by 40.
Well, we will get into our predictions for this game. We'll talk a little bit about the Detroit renewed running game that everybody's talking about. And they've got some help to help stop the run this past week, getting a deal and a trade with the Giants. And, of course, we have our usual parts of the show. Do better and better at life.
You ready to dig into this Detroit Lion team a little bit? This the big bad Detroit Lions, the team that we should be shaking in our boots over because they can run the ball down anybody's throat at any given time.
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson, the next Walter Payton,
right?
Or Barry Sanders, I guess, since he's a Lion.
So
Kerryon Johnson is the guy that everybody's excited about on the Lions, and he is number two in the league. In terms of yards per attempt, has almost 70 carries, and the only guy ahead of him is, of course, the most prolific running back in the league, Matt Breida of the San Francisco 49ers.
Right. Exactly. Who?
Yeah.
What was his last name for real?
Breida.
Breida?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. Good for him. I'm sure his mom's real excited.
They have about the same number of carries, and they're just crushing it in the league this year. And I do like Kerryon Johnson, though, as much as I kind of poke fun at that stat a little bit. And he had a big game last week against the Dolphins, broke off a 71-yard run, broke off another 24-yard run. So he has the ability to make big plays against a porous Dolphins defense.
Well, it feels a little like Jamal Charles-y, doesn't it? Or I'm trying to think of another back that was Chris Johnson would come to mind in this sense. The idea that they're really great on the stat line because they bust out and they break off a couple of those big home run type runs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a lot of, 2 yards in a cloud of dust. That's how Kerryon Johnson feels to me. And especially if you look at the stats overall, too, it's not like Detroit's leading the league in rushing, this resurgent rushing game. I mean, yards per game, I mean, they're 12th running the ball right now. That's close to middle of the pack. And I look at the Seahawks defense and the different backs that they've shut down, whether that's been like Cohen or Gurley. I mean, just go down the list. Nobody's been able to run the ball on the Seahawks. And I don't see that starting with the Detroit Lions. That's for darn sure.
No, everybody's super hyped up about this last game against the Dolphins where they ran for 248 yards, but their only other 100-yard rushing performance this season was against the New England Patriots in week 3. Matt Patricia, super hyped to beat his old boss there in New England. So, I mean, that's really probably their biggest quality win to this point in the season, that week three victory, 26-10 over the New England Patriots. Other than that, I think we saw last night that the Dolphins aren't exactly a world beating team, losing to the Texans. And so that
getting drubbed by the Texans.
Yeah, they got stomped.
Yeah. They were in the game for the first three quarters.
Sure.
And then it just kind of snowballed out of control.
The Lions' other win was against the Packers right before the bye week, 31-23. And that was on their home turf. So they've won two of their games at home this year.
Yeah, it's interesting because we sit here and, you know, kind of talk about these two teams and their story for the first seven games of the season for them. You know, both teams start out 0-2. Both teams rally back to get back to 500. Both teams find their running game, and that turns things around for their franchise and, it, you know, have a resurgent year that way. So it's interesting. I mean, the tail of the tape between the two teams as far as their overall story coming into this game, very similar.
The surprising thing was just the in terms of quality of opponent that these two teams started off facing. You know, you mentioned they also went 0-2, but they went 0-2 against the Jets and the San Francisco 49ers. And I don't know, have the Jets won another game? I know the Niners haven't.
Yeah, I mean, didn't the Niners beat the Cards, or did the Cards get them? I don't remember. Anyways, hard to tell
this weekend.
Knowing. Oh, okay. Well, no, they played once already. But yeah, anyways, long story short, yeah, some of those losses were really bad losses in the sense that those teams are terrible. And you look at the Seahawks, and sure, they have three losses on the record, but every one of them was super close. One is against the Bears team that everybody thinks is good. Another against the Broncos. And the last one being against the Rams, who everybody has anointed the Super Bowl champion for the next 10 years. And we kept them within a 3-point game. So I think if you're just looking at the resume, the Seahawks resume coming into this game, definitely more impressive.
You look at the one common opponent that these two teams have faced. It's the Dallas Cowboys. And that was a game where the Lions lost in Dallas. It was a close game, 26-24. But when you saw the Seahawks play the Cowboys, it was, I mean, the Cowboys didn't stand much of a chance in that game.
No. And look, I think that the Seahawks have definitely been downgraded for their play throughout the year. I mean, I don't know. For some reason, they get no credit for their win against the Cowboys. I mean, for example, I think that's a prime example right there. Everybody else likes to talk about the Cowboys as if they're a team that's in the mix. But until you bring it up, well, Seattle beat Dallas, then everybody's like, no, that didn't mean nothing. Like, I mean, just look at the power rankings that you see all over the place. Tons of people have the Cowboys ahead of the Seahawks. It's
maddening. We finally passed them, though, this last week after Dallas lost and we had our bye. And so the Seahawks actually moved up in a lot of power rankings by simply not playing.
Well, we knew that the Seahawks would crush the bye, that's for sure. And it actually is nice that came right after the London trip. It gives the team a chance to recuperate, get back, get their bodies right after coming back from London. And then also, too, to start welcoming back a few players back to the fold, including one, KJ Wright.
Yes, my name is KJ Wright from Olive Branch, Mississippi. This is my 8th year here, graduated from Mississippi State, and I am glad to be back.
KJ Wright reminding us all who he is and the media as well.
Just in case you forgot. Yeah. Really cool to have KJ coming back. That only makes this linebacking core that much better and the defense as a whole that much better. I'm so excited. I'm sure there's going to be some rust. I'm sure it's going to take at least a half for him to get just back up to full KJ speed. But man alive, it seems like forever getting to this point. It was just supposed to be a couple of weeks. And after a setback, it's turned into 4, 5, 6 weeks. And I'm really excited to see him return to the lineup.
Yeah, looking at Pro Football Reference, though, and their injury report, they have him down as doubtful for this game. So
ask KJ what he thinks about that.
Yeah, I think he's got to play. I think
KJ play.
I think
he's
see
playing.
KJ play, see Ed Dixon back on the field as well. He was another guy who had a press conference with the media and definitely liked the vibe coming from Dixon.
Okay, I was going to ask you if you'd watched that presser and what your feelings were after watching that, because I want Ed Dixon to be a Seahawk forever after listening to that press conference. What a cool freaking dude.
Yeah, just seems super chill and definitely appears to be a team guy is the sense that you get from his interview too. And
he wants to play ball and win. That's it. That's just
talked
like
about how he's been a fan of the Seahawks for a while. That's nice to hear.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, a very humble guy who has his priorities in the right place. And I think listening to KJ Wright's presser as well, you got that sense, too. They asked him about his contract situation because he's coming up on the last year of his deal as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, you know, that's agent stuff. And I just want to play ball. Like, that was basically his answer. You kind of get the sense that the Seahawks have gotten back to that core group of players that, look, the money's great and we get paid a lot of money and I want to make a lot of money. But at the end of the day, it ain't show me the money. It's let's play ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think you see a difference in the way that the team's playing because of that.
Well, they definitely need this win against the Lions, right? I went on to the Knock on Sports show Thursday night with Anthony, and mm-hmm. you know, we talked about kind of these next five games and the type of opponents that the Seahawks are going to face. This, it kind of turns this game into a must-win type of game for Seattle, because you have the road game against the Lions coming on after the bye. That it seems like a winnable game, but then you take on a team like the LA Chargers, then you have the LA Rams, then you have Green Bay at home, and then you go on the road against Carolina, which has been historically a tough place for Seattle to get a win. Those are always close games against Carolina. Carolina's playing well. After those five games, that brings you back into that closing stretch of the season in December, where you do have four out of your last five games that you play at home. And those are going to be important games for the Seahawks to win. But to get to that point, you have a lot of teams kind of here in the middle that are going to be potential playoff teams with the Lions. You know, the Chargers are probably going to be in the mix for a playoff game. The Rams, of course, they're almost, you know, a lock for the playoffs if they just get a few more wins over these next couple weeks. And then you have the Packers and Panthers who are hanging in there in their division as well.
Yeah. And then you also have the Vikings and Chiefs coming up later on in the schedule as well. So when you do look at that, I mean, yes, there is a lot of quality opponents left on the schedule coming down the stretch here. And a lot of those, fortunately, are going to be home games. But when you're looking at that stretch of games, this Lions team needs to be your last tune-up, right? Before you go and you play. This is, to me, what's coming up after the Lions game is the meat of the schedule. Like, that's going to tell you everything you need to know about this team. After you go through Chargers, Rams, Packers, Panthers. Those four games, that's going to be the tail of the tape. They got to go at least 2-2, if not 3-1 in that stretch. And that's totally possible. But you got to start that by beating the Lions this week. And I think that's totally doable going up to Detroit. This Lions defense, even with the addition of Snacks Harrison, is not a world beater by any stretch of the imagination. Their linebackers, not that great. Secondary, not that great. I don't know if Ziggy Ansah is coming back or not, but they can't really stop the run. They're 29th in the league when it comes to stopping the run for as far as yards per game is concerned.
Right.
Like, when I look at that, and I know that the Seahawks have been stopping opposing running backs and shutting down running games, and both of these offenses are predicated on the offense running the football and then the quarterbacks making chunk plays. Like, that's the formula to win. When I know that's the formula to win, and I can see that the Detroit Lions can't stop the run, I feel pretty darn good about our chances.
Yeah, defensively, in terms of DVOA, the Seahawks ranked number 4 overall in the NFL, Detroit all the way down at 30. So there is a clear distinction between these two defenses. And I mean, you even look in terms of points allowed. You know, the Seahawks 5th in the league, Detroit Lions down there at 24th. Defensive pass yards, you know, the Seahawks are 3rd, and Detroit's actually at 7 in terms of what they're allowing for the pass. But in terms of rushing, they're allowing 139 yards per game. And I do wonder, though, how deceptive some of these statistics are, because 139 yards per game, and you say, oh, yeah, well, they're near the last in the league. But then I look at the Seahawks rushing yards per game that they allow, and they're allowing 120 yards, which is 24th in the league. But I know by what we've seen through these mm-hmm. first few weeks that the Seahawks have been awfully good at shutting down good opposing running backs.
Yeah, think about it in these terms. That number is inflated, I'd say, mainly by the one back that's tore us up. And that was Lindsey of the Broncos, game one. And I think that was solely a function of two things. One would be Shaquem Griffin making his first start in the NFL and was a little overwhelmed. And two, nobody had ever heard of Philip Lindsay. Nobody had any tape on Philip Lindsay. Like, he was brand new to the league. It was his first game ever. And he felt like the guy that tore us up the most. But, you know, beyond that.
Yeah, you got the Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott. But really, that was the
only. Was in garbage time.
Right. And then you had Todd Gurley. That's where the three. Those were the three guys.
And you held him to 70 odd some yards on the ground.
Yeah. 155 total, though, for the Rams in that game.
Yeah. OK. So they had the one jet sweep.
Right.
That was like, again, I mean, it's just. Dude, they have taken big time running backs and made them average. I mean, whether that's Zeke, Gurley, David Johnson. Yeah. Did we just put David Johnson in the big time back conversation?
I put him in the big time back conversation.
Maybe a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And even then it was questionable. I've never been on the David Johnson bandwagon. And like, I think we're kind of seeing exactly, you know, who he is.
Yeah, we'll give him an offensive line and a quarterback who can check it down to him well. He's fine.
Josh Rosen throws a beautiful check down pass. It's beautiful. It's the prettiest ball in all of football.
I forgot we were supposed to watch for that. Was that a Cowherd thing?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he wanted us to watch that last Cardinals game and then everybody tweet at him, you know, what they thought of Josh Rosen.
How pretty those Josh Rosen passes are.
Yeah. Hey, Peyton Manning threw ugly touchdowns. Like, he threw ducks for touchdowns and Rosen throws beautiful interceptions. I'll put it to you that way.
Well, that does bring us to the guy that we do have to worry about in this game, and that is
Golden Tate.
Golden Tate's one of them.
I'm not even joking.
Well, Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, and Matthew Stafford's the guy who can get the ball to him, and Stafford's having a pretty good year so far this season. And really, looking at his Pro Football Focus numbers, even when he's blitzed, he's having success. Of course, when he has no pressure, he's, you know, among the top in the league, which is to be expected, you know, for a veteran quarterback like Stafford, number one pick overall when he came into the league. And really, it's getting pressure on Stafford with your front four guys, which is important to him having a limited amount of success. You know, it makes him an average quarterback when you can get pressure on him. And, you know, that'd be pretty good for any quarterback, you know, who you can say that they're average when they're under pressure by just four guys.
Oh, for sure. And look, that's kind of the MO when it comes to Matt Stafford. It has been his whole career. You get a little pressure on him. You make the game close coming down to the fourth quarter and watch him make a mistake. He's going to make that one boneheaded throw where he's throwing off his back foot. He goes sidearm and he does all those histrionics to try to be fancy out there and ends up making a mistake. But I do look at this receiving core and think that is a group of guys that could give us some fits. Like right out of the gate. I mean, people forget about Galladay. He's a hell of a player. And look, I genuinely fear Golden Tate. He's still doing it out there. And the broken tackles and run after catch and all of those things. And they know how to use him too. They understand his skill set. I look at that and I was like, I just don't want Golden to beat us. Like that was when I was going through their offense. That was the guy that I circled. I was like, oh man. He could really give Trey Flowers problems.
Well, you mentioned Kenny Galladay leading the team in terms of yards per reception, 16 yards, at 465 yards on the year. That's only two behind Golden Tate's 467. The impressive thing about Tate is, and it's always been this, his ability to make yards after the catch, 254 yards after the catch. So you have to be a solid tackler. And so fortunately with Trey Flowers, he might be the most solid tackler of any of our corners. And so that could help negate some of that. But Golden Tate has always been good at making dudes miss.
Oh yeah. It's his forte. That's how he's made his money in this league. No doubt about it. You know, the other thing we just talked about getting pressure on Matt Stafford, their offensive line's pretty decent. So yeah. that's going to be a challenge. I mean, we've seen the pass rush step up over the last few weeks. And, you know, especially in the Raiders game, I'm really hoping Frank Clark is like not mysteriously sick again, like on Sunday.
Yeah. Can he play the whole game this
week? That'd be nice.
After having a bye?
Yeah.
Like, stop eating tainted turkey, Frank.
Whatever it is. Is that what it was? Tainted turkey?
Well, that's what he said it was initially, but I don't know. I don't know why it would hang with you that long.
I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something to tainted tryptophan in turkey for Tank. Like, that's just not good. Like, it must just linger in your system. I don't know.
Maybe.
It's science. I'm sure it's science somewhere in there.
hopefully he has gotten all of that out of his system. We talked a little bit about Kerryon Johnson already. You know, watching, going back and just watching that game against the Dolphins, I wouldn't confuse the fact that they had a lot of rushing yards against the Dolphins with saying that this is some kind of newfound offense. I mean, they still have Matthew Stafford at quarterback. It's still Jim Bob Cooter calling plays. And this is still a pass-first offense for the Detroit Lions. Just because they had one, you know, really solid game, and you know, Kerryon Johnson was the first guy to have 100 rushing yards since, I don't know, the last, what, 10 years for the Lions? It was something crazy right. like that.
Yeah,
and it doesn't mean that they've somehow evolved to becoming a more dominant and rush-focused team. This is just like we said, this is more of a home run. It speaks to the home run ability of Kerryon Johnson more than in any kind of philosophical change with the team.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. And you got to enjoy that matchup for the Seahawks, just knowing that they've been really great at not giving up the big play. I'm sure they'll respect that ability to hit that home run on the ground. But really, I think you do just approach this very much as, okay, let's get the front four to stop the, or the front seven to stop the running game. Try not to get eight guys down in the box on the regular, maybe some timely blitzes, but really focus on Matt Stafford in the passing game and making sure that you don't give up anything deep over the top. And that's exactly how this defense has played in the Pete Carroll era. And this defense has done it all year long, even though they were supposed to be terrible. Remember how they're supposed to be terrible?
And I do. Yeah.
They're not terrible. They're actually really good.
And we're getting KJ Wright back.
Yeah, and that can't do anything but help.
We do need to see more of a pass rush. You mentioned the offensive line for the Lions. I do think that they have that potential to struggle there. And we saw against the Rams, when the pass rush does struggle, you know, that's another receiving core that the Seahawks had a little bit of trouble with. So that, I think it speaks to the importance of, you know, kind of having that same type of mentality that you went into the game with Oakland with, you know, get a drive up on them early, get some pressure on them, and then you can try and shut down the run. And then all you have to do is worry about Matt Stafford. And if you put him in the position where he's got to throw the ball a lot, then I do like the ability of our pass rush to eventually get to him.
Or at least just make it uncomfortable so he does make that mistake.
Yeah.
And that's all you're after there. But this team has always played us tough. There's no doubt about that. I mean, every game has been close that I can think of in the Pete Carroll era. I guess except for the playoff game. We kind of mollywomped them there. But, I mean, still, like in the regular season at the very least.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is pause for concern. But if you're going to be a serious playoff contender, this is a game you have to have. And I'm not the type of guy that likes to talk about must-win games in the middle of the year. Like, I mean, you and I, neither of us really do that. But like we said earlier, I think we both agree, this legitimately is a must-win game.
Well, and you brought it up in terms of the next five games, right? If you lose this game, then I think you do have to go 3-1 over the next four games.
Right.
And when you have the Rams among those games and over the course of the next four games, you kind of look at that and say, well, that could be a loss. Well, then you're having to beat Carolina on the road. You're having to beat the Los Angeles Chargers at home. Fortunately, that one's at home.
I don't care if that's at home. I hate playing Phillip Rivers.
Yeah.
He tears us up every single time.
Right.
Every time.
So lose this one, and you're looking at, and then you have a matchup with Aaron Rodgers too in there.
Yeah. And well, that one's a little less scary considering that he's got nobody around him right now.
Right. But it's still Aaron Rodgers. And
yeah,
I mean, they haven't had very much success with when they've come to Seattle over the past years. And so fortunately we do have them at home on a Thursday night. I mean,
yeah,
I do expect a win in that game too. It's some of those other ones where I go, yeah, that's going to be tough.
I feel pretty good about the Rams game in LA,
but come out the stretch. Yeah. If you come out of the stretch 3-2, 4-1, holy smokes, look out.
Yeah. Now you're that team that everybody's talking about. Hey, don't want to see Seattle in the playoffs. They've found their winning formula with all their veterans and all those things. Now imagine too, if you get through that stretch with that sort of record and you're able to get, say, Michael Kendricks back too, because that's in play.
Yeah, well, and Pete talked about that, kind of waiting for an update. Kendricks did have his hearing with the league this week, but no word coming out of that yet, from what I've heard.
Well, the league is dragging their feet, but the judge also said, this needs to be taken care of now. He's like, you got to quit screwing around.
Yeah.
So the court has told the league, get your poop in a group, let's go.
Make a decision. This can't be, you can't just suspend a guy for an unlimited amount of time.
Right. Just while you hem-haw around until, you just call it indefinite until it takes you, the entire year to make it something definite. Like, that doesn't work. They're like, that's some BS.
Make a decision.
And my gut tells me, I feel like this is going to be 4 games.
Even if it's 6 games, I mean, you're still looking at the guy coming back toward the end of the season.
And, oh gosh, you put him with B-Wags and Mingo and KJ. Holy smokes, that linebacking core is now loaded.
Yeah, in an area that over the last few years hasn't been. So you actually have some room to rotate guys, to have some depth in case there's an injury.
Right.
It can only improve than special teams. Those guys being able to play teams.
Yeah. So it all adds up to having a really amazing shot to go far this second half of the season. And you got to, again, this is the first step, is beating the Detroit Lions on the road. We talked about trying to go 500 on the road all year. This is one of those teams that you should be able to get one, especially. Do you think of Ford Field as being an amazing home field advantage for the Lions? Is that something that scares you at all?
Not really.
No.
I mean, they lost to the Jets there. They got blown out.
The Jets.
Here's my prediction.
Okay.
I think the Seahawks are going to beat the Lions, and then everybody's going to talk about how the Lions aren't a good team.
I would love to argue with you, but I feel like you're basically Nostradamus right now. Like, that's as good a prediction as anybody can make. I think that's actually probably spot on. How much do you think the Hawks won by? I'm guessing 7 points.
I think it's going to be at least, I think it's going to be 11.
Ooh. So yeah. 2 scores plus, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we feel pretty good coming out of this game.
I would love that. That sounds amazing.
One pleasant surprise for me this year with the Seahawks, coming out of the bye, number 2 in the league for a takeaway differential. They're +7.
I was going to ask if you had that pulled up, but do we know where the Lions are at?
They're -1.
There you go.
So 21st in the league.
Yeah. So turnover differential is a huge part of football. I mean, obviously, it's all about the ball. It's what Pete Carroll preaches all the time. And it's one of the reasons why we've had as much success this season as we had. If you're good at creating turnovers and you play somebody who is mistake prone like Matthew Stafford, I like the way that could go. That feels pretty good.
The ball's definitely bouncing the Seahawks way more this year than in years past. And I think that was a big complaint for us just with turnover luck in past years. Like, they've been in the position to cause the turnovers, but they just haven't fallen on the football. And this year they have.
Yeah. I mean, short of, wasn't there one game where they strip sacked somebody and bounced right back up in his hands, in the Goff's hands? Did that happen? Like, so short of that, I mean, but yeah, it does seem to be going our way now. And I wonder if that's a little bit of a function of a lot of younger guys playing and just having that ingrained in their head day after day after day to go after the ball. If that's the difference.
It's always been a focus of Pete Carroll, though, so it's hard for me to. I just feel like it's more of luck of the bounce in this year.
I to think it was skill.
Just because it is such a focus for Pete Carroll. And you know what? Maybe in terms of differential, I don't think we see, because Russell hasn't been under the pressure that he has been in the last year. Let's talk offensive line for the Seahawks, because talk about another, where we say pleasant surprises coming out of the bye week. We see a couple different things with the offensive line and the fact that they're, over the last few games, only 13 pressures. And that was how many sacks? They had 12 sacks on Russell Wilson after the first 2 games.
Right.
And then to go the next stretch of games and only give up 13 pressures. I mean, that's a pleasant surprise. Red zone scoring, top of the league inside the red zone this year. They have 4 rushing touchdowns. Yeah, this is feeling pretty good. Those are pleasant surprises going into the coming out of the bye week.
Well, and it all comes back to them finally making the commitment to the running game. I mean, I'd noticed this with Houston just last night in that Thursday night game. Another offensive line that's had the struggles, right?
Mm-hmm.
But once they finally committed to running the football and letting those guys be aggressive, letting them go downhill, letting them keep the defensive line off balance, like, that really does permeate all the way throughout the rest of your game. So,
and it allows your quarterback to be super efficient. And Deshaun Watson, yeah, he didn't have a ton of yards in that game, but 5 touchdown passes. He had more touchdown passes than incomplete passes.
Yeah, I think he, like, at one point in the game, his previous 5 throws, 4 of them had been touchdowns.
Something crazy like that, yeah.
And everybody talks about yards, you know, like yards are important. But if you throw 4 touchdowns out of 5 passes, I'll take that over 300 yards and 2 picks.
Yeah, I'll take 5 touchdowns, thank you, and under 200 yards passing.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine.
I've heard a lot of mentions about passing yards in the national media over the last week or so, and it's just unbelievable to me that people get hung up in freaking passing yards.
Well, that's why I continuously talk about how terrible a year that Russell's having week to week. I mean, with all these just 200-yard passing games, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What are we going to do as a team without Russell being 90% of the offense?
Right. I've heard this a lot in conversation regarding Dak Prescott. Well, he's had 16 sub-200-yard games. Okay, what? Give me the stats that matter. What was his completion percentage? How many touchdowns did he have? Did he throw any picks? Did he have any fumbles? How many times was he sacked? How many rushing yards did he have? What was their third down conversion rate in those games? No, you're going to bring up freaking yards. Come on. It just drives me crazy. And that's one of the things that I don't think Seattle's got enough credit for over this last 4-game stretch is the idea that Russell Wilson has been unbelievably efficient. Looking good from the pocket, even.
Yeah, we've seen a pocket. And one other thing that we haven't seen is the insane number of scribble plays that we saw with the Daryl Bevel offense last year.
Oh, I know. It's unbelievable. Like, I just saw a headline. Matt Patricia said their number one concern was Russell Wilson's ability to scramble in the secondary plays, right? I'm like, yes, please think that. Please think that. Because that's not happening very often at this point in time. And secondly, your number one concern, if you're Matt Patricia, and I'm sure he knows this, he doesn't need some dork chop in Montana telling him.
Yeah.
Like, you got to stop the run.
Yeah,
like,
because we're coming at you.
Yeah, that's got to be your number one concern if you're the defensive coordinator, which basically Matt Patricia is for the Detroit Lions.
Well, we did find out in the press conference with Brian Schottenheimer this week that plays, you know, where Russell is a little bit off script and maybe even fumbles the ball. That's not they don't practice that.
I would say, obviously, again, the ability to run it, obviously some of the scramble plays, you know, we really didn't design the play. You guys might find it funny, but for Russ to drop the ball and then to pick it up and throw it, like, we didn't practice that.
Shoddy with the sarcasm.
I like it. It surprises me wholly that they didn't draw that up. I figured that was just a good way to suck the safeties up.
Yeah.
Was it like drop the ball?
Maybe in the future they work that in.
No, for sure. I think it's something that, now that it's on tape, I think you can use that to your advantage, right?
Watch out, Lions.
Yeah. Just be dropping the football on purpose. No, Russ, it's funny that he referred to that as a scramble play, though, because it's not like Russ really scrambled around in that. Like, he kind of moved up in the pocket. But
the play broke down, I think, from what the initial plan was on that particular play. And so it was a little bit of a scramble play. But looks a whole lot different, right, than in the past seasons.
Right. I really feel like you're going to see this receiving core, Lockett Baldwin and Moore, have themselves a day against this Lions secondary. They are as average gets. You know, short of maybe Glover Quinn. I like Glover Quinn. I think he's a good safety. And I don't know. I mean, his PFF grade isn't exactly stunning this year, but I know he can play.
Sure.
But that's the one guy I look at in that secondary and have any sort of respect for, except for maybe Deshaun Shedd. I don't know how much he's even playing for them, but he's there. I think this receiving corps is going to have a big day. I look for David Moore to continue his hot streak.
I think the biggest mismatch, though, isn't necessarily with the corners and the secondary of the team. I think it is getting to that second level and against the linebackers, because they do have a pretty good defensive line. But I really don't see anybody here at linebacker for the team that you worry that much about.
No, absolutely not. I don't think I could even name a starter right now.
Jared Davis?
Sure.
And Christian Jones look right. Like they're the two dudes with the most snaps at linebacker.
Are they also going to pull Bob Anderson out and toss him out there?
Yeah.
Those are some generic linebackers, man.
Yeah, who I've never heard of. So,
right,
getting Ed Dixon back for this game, that could be big for him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
There's a guy that you don't really have on tape for a Seahawks player for the Lions.
No, but you know who he is.
Oh yeah,
I mean there's plenty of tape of him.
And you can see how
Panther.
They used Will Disley and their tight ends in the past. So
right, hey, what's the update on Vinette? Have you heard anything on that? Is his back just like screwed and like he's done now?
I feel like he should be back this game after having the bye week.
All I know is this back thing's supposedly a chronic thing. Like it's not. This isn't like, hey, heal up and you'll be fine. It's more like, yeah, this has been bothering him since he got here, and like we'll milk this out as long as we can. But it doesn't
unknown
look
if he'll be active Sunday for the Lions. Mm.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how much they do involve Ed Dixon into the game plan here. Having him as a blocker in there, I think, will be huge. I think you'll continue to see them use George Fant as the extra blocking lineman. I kind of like that. I love that jumbo package, and they come in and just cram it down your throat with Chris Carson just thumping people.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. That's fun football to watch to me. I love it. Watch them fluke just pancake dude after dude. Give me some more of that. I think Ed Dixon could really be a big part of that coming into this game. He talked in his press conference that he really had no idea how much he was going to get used. He's fully prepared to maybe play two snaps or 30.
So Thursday practice reports, and we won't have the final game status designation until after Friday practice. But we do have full participation from Ed Dixon. Nick Vinette was a full participant, and KJ Wright and Deion Jordan as well. The only guys that were limited were DJ Fluker. You know, he'll play. Rasheem Green, still limited with his ankle injury. Nico Thorpe, limited with groin injury. And Shamar Stephen did not practice.
Really? I didn't know about Stephen. I'm surprised that Green isn't, a little further along in his recovery.
I expected him to be back after the bye, but not so much. Let's see, limited for the Lions. Ziggy Ansah, shoulder. Jared Davis, calf. So one of their linebackers has a calf injury.
Right. I don't know who they'll ever find to replace him.
Insert generic dude's name.
Yeah, just any dude who's played linebacker, just go do that.
Theo Riddick did not practice. He's one of their running backs. And looking at the full participants with injuries, you got Amir Abdullah, ankle injury, Darius Slay, and Golden Tate, who were full participants but listed with injuries.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we'll see how it goes. I wonder what the Vegas line is for this game. I hadn't seen it, but I've definitely read some previews kind of going into this in everybody picking Detroit and everybody talking about how hot the Lions are coming into this game, winning three out of their last four, finding their running game, and really, kind of turning it on, playing better defense. And it's like, oh, they're the hot team? Because I'm thinking of a team that's won three out of their last four, whose defense is playing lights out, who's found their identity in their running game, and they have the better quarterback to boot. And that sounds more like the Seattle Seahawks than it does the Detroit Lions. So it's kind of funny to me that most of the people see the Lions as being the hotter team coming into this game.
Well, what East Coast teams have the Seahawks beat at this point in the year? You have the Lions beating the Miami Dolphins, and you have them beating the New England Patriots. So, of course, they're the more hot team.
I see. No, that's a good point.
The Lions are favored by just 2.5.
Okay, so Vegas basically saying that in their mind, the Seahawks on paper are half a point better than the Detroit Lions.
Interesting.
I'd say the Seahawks are, if you're looking at betting lines, are easily on a neutral field, easily 3-point favorites in my mind.
Yes.
Easily.
Easily.
You could talk me into up to 6 probably.
The more appropriate line for me, I think, would be to favor the Seahawks by 1.5.
I was going to say 1.
But I think we can expect a big win this week. I expected a big win against the Cardinals on their home turf too. Mm-hmm. But I do feel in terms of going into the game, I feel similarly to how I felt against the Cardinals.
Do you? Okay, because I definitely have a lot more respect for the Lions than I do the Cardinals.
I have a little bit more respect for the Cardinals. I know it seems odd after
the
season.
They're walking dumpster fire. Yeah. You're going to give the Cardinals more props than they deserve. The Giants, you still can't let go of. Like, I don't get it, man.
Well, in terms of quarterback, the Lions do have the clearly better quarterback.
They have the clearly better team than either of those two teams by like a lot. I don't know. You got to start crapping on the Cards as much as you crap on the Rams.
I probably should.
Yeah. Come to the dark side. Get your sports hate. We got to stoke your sports hate up a little more.
If we come out of the game with a 3-point win against the Lions, the same way we did against the Cardinals, I will feel better about that kind of win.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I guess it kind of also depends on how that ends up manifesting, right? Like how that 3-point win happened.
Yeah.
Like if you get like lucky or something towards the end or something, you'd be like, yeah, I don't know, man. But
if it's a 10-point lead and the Lions just happen to get a touchdown to bring it within 3 at the end.
Yeah.
That feels more like how it's going to go for me.
Right. I'm right with you on that. And I really, the couple things I'm looking for just obviously Seattle's rushing yards, you know, get over 150 yards or so on the ground combined with all the different backs that touch the ball and Russell Wilson. Right. Mm-hmm. And I want to see time of possession. That's something that's going to be very interesting to me. If they dominate time of possession in this game, Detroit will not have a chance.
No.
Because you'll wear down a mediocre defense and keep the ball out of Matt Stafford's hands and just keep them from having the ability or the opportunities to make those big plays that they really do feast on.
All right, Adam. Well, I think that does it for our look at the Lions. What do you say we get into the back half of the show?
Let's do this. Back half of the show. Catch you guys on the flip side.
Getting into the second half of the show, I want to let you know that Lyft is joining the Seattle Seahawks in honoring those who serve in November. 12% of proceeds from all game day rides and pro shop sales are going directly to the Mission Continues and their efforts to empower veterans transitioning into their communities. So you can go to Lyft and you can plug the code in GoHawks18 into the promo section and get $5 off 12 rides to and from CenturyLink Field on game days. And we'll put a link in the show notes too. Like I said, 12% of the proceeds go into the Mission Continues.
Right on, man. That's a pretty cool deal by them. And it's going to make your life easier getting to the game.
And you get $5 off too, each way.
Right. Everybody wins.
Speaking of winners, Brian DeLude on winning. Congrats to him on winning the week 7 pick'em. I think the fix was in, though.
Yeah, I don't really want to congratulate Brian because he beat me by like a game and I'm mad about it. And it, again, this is all about me and how it affects me. So screw you, Brian.
here's the thing. It's either a fix on his part, or it's just a huge coincidence that it's the 20th anniversary of the Big Lebowski, and Brian's last name just happens to be an anagram for L Dude.
What? Wait, what kind of beautiful mind crap are you pulling here? Like, what did you do? What'd you do last night? Did you sit and like puzzle this out?
I was on Facebook and I got a notice that it's the 20-year anniversary of the Big Lebowski.
Okay, but
then I saw that Brian won. His last name's DeLude. And how do you not look at that and go, oh, L Dude is in there?
Because I would never in a million years look at that and think that. Like, that's some interesting thinking there by you.
Looking at the leaderboard, there is a 3-way tie for the Russell Wilson autographed artwork that we got for the first prize in the pick'em. Jermaine Ole, Jesper Sacco, and Dee Weezy, all at 76 picks correct this season so far.
Well, I guess we're going to see who can separate over the last half of the season here. I feel like I'm one of those people. I definitely started to separate again from you this last week, and I'm gunning for those folks up there at the top.
I'm only 14 picks behind.
It's in range.
I don't know. When I look and see that I'm in 169th place, I don't feel in range. And you're at 153, so I don't know how much you're in range either. But
I'm right there. Don't try to rain on my little picks parade here. I'm right there. I'm coming for you guys. I just need them to like forget to pick a week or two or three.
Well, you didn't get off to a very good start this week by picking Miami in the Thursday night game.
Nah, I had to go with the Cali kid. You know, like I am a little worried about my picks this week, mainly because many of them came from a place of I wanted to make a pick I could root for.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely, this was a more fandom driven week for me. Yeah. I don't know why. It just felt right.
And of course, when you say the Cali kid, Brock Osweiler from Kalispell, Montana, I know people might confuse Cali for thinking California, but no.
No, nobody thinks about California. I certainly don't.
Cali, yeah. You could see how that wouldn't get confused
Cali
at all.
Cali with a K.
Got some new members of the flock this week. Let's start out by thanking our associate producer, Dustin Mock. And of course, we got some new flockers as well. Michael in Ashburn, Ireland. We got to run into Michael with his brother, Owen, over there in London. So, and he sends along a note, says, great to meet you two guys in London. And the rest of the flockers finally joined the podcast. No longer a bum.
I didn't think he was a bum just immediately upon meeting him or his brother, Owen. A couple of really freaking good dudes. But yeah, it's good that you got in the flock finally, Michael. Like, you know, I didn't want to have to call you a freeloader, and now I don't have to. So welcome. Welcome to the flock, man.
Now we just need to get their dad on board.
Another good dude. That whole family was like, yeah, they're legit.
Welcome to the flock to Matt Shields, in for a dollar. Welcome, Matt.
Welcome, Matt. Enjoy the bonus content and the Pick'em show. I think we put together a nice Pick'em show this week. We had a good and boisterous discussion regarding the Amari Cooper trade. And I think that those of you who are not in the flock and don't get to listen to the Pick'em show, you're missing out on this one.
And I think we can finally say that we've accomplished something now that Matt's on board, because Matt's been listening for a long time. And it's kind of like, you know, when you have that person who you know really well and they like finally join Facebook.
Right.
I feel that that's like what's happened here with Matt. And he writes along a note. He says, I've listened, I've posted, I've left voicemails, but the thing I haven't done is become an official member of the flock.
Because you're cheap, Matt. Because you're cheap. That's why.
No, not true. Thank you guys for all your hard work to create an amazing show and fan experience. With that said, I enjoy making some very specific game forecasts that are made largely out of hope and faith for our beloved Hawks dominating the other teams. So here is the Shields precision prediction for this week. That's not hard to say at all, Matt.
The Shields
precision prediction.
Onomatopoeia, something. I don't know. That's hard. Shields precision. I can't even do it. All right. Good job. So Matt's thoughts. Can we just call it that instead?
Number one. Matt's prediction. Let's go with that.
Okay. I thought Matt's thoughts were okay too. I don't know. Like, okay. Whatever you want.
We can go with that.
Yeah.
Matt's thoughts and predictions.
There we go. Now that has a ring.
Number one, this is the week that Chris Carson will put the rest of the NFL and its fans on notice. We've known he's been good for a while, but this is the game that fans around the league will look back to as the first time they really started paying attention to him. Three total TDs.
I actually totally and completely agree with that statement. I think that's a hell of a precision prediction.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Number two. Tyler Lockett will have a 60-yard play, either on a jet sweep or a trick play.
He needs to change it from precision predictions to, like, basically the second coming of Nostradamus. That's another really solid prediction, I think.
Number three, our ground game continues to be a dominant force, which opens up this game for Shoddy to make the decision to add a few wrinkles, and we get to see some exciting, flashy plays. This leads to Russell Wilson rushing for 50 total yards.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. That's the one that I disagree with him on, because I think they're going to run the ball so effectively with the backs. And
Russell won't need to.
And with the play action working at that point, like, Russ is not going to have to. And if he doesn't have to, let's not do it, right? I don't see that happening.
And I don't know how you're going against Matt, but...
He's 2 for 3.
Number four, Tre'Quell Flowers gets an acrobatic interception.
Yeah, one of those guys, right? Well, you know it's coming, right? Stafford's going to throw one boneheaded throw for sure. So the opportunity will be there.
I'd rather see it, from Shaquille's side of the field, but
yeah, for your personal bet.
You know what? I laughed at Tre'Quell, but it turns out Tre'Quell is his actual name.
Yeah.
So we have Tre'Quell and Shaquille. How cool is that?
That's
blowing my mind right now.
How confusing is that? Yeah. I don't know, man.
Well, thankfully, he does go by Trey.
That helps.
Yeah. But yeah, just looking on Wikipedia, sure enough.
I did not know that about Trey.
I think there was probably a lot of us that didn't know that. Congrats to Matt for, like, enlightening us.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, here's the thing. I mean, you might as well just play the NBC The More You Know sounder right there.
Yeah.
That was a public service announcement.
Got to be the only team with the Keel tandem at corner.
We got Keels and Keems. I will say I'm a little nervous about the Detroit Lions because they do have a lot of dudes with apostrophes in their first name.
Yeah, this is the matchup of the offensive line with the initials against the defensive line with the apostrophes.
Right.
Periods versus apostrophes. Who you got?
I think you can end a statement better with more authority by saying period. And so I'm going with periods over apostrophes. This is about as relevant as which tape's the best.
Yes, we do have more on that too, by the way.
Okay.
Because all right. Let's get through our welcome to the Flux, because Jack, he upped his pledge from $1 to $5 and sends along a note, bud. Says, "Hi guys, can't thank you enough for the things you do within the Seahawks community. I was actually at the game in London, but was unfortunately unable to meet you guys, which I am bummed out by."
Dude, like, why are you dodging us?
I don't know.
All right, that's fine. It's been
the game,
though,
however, was the single greatest thing I have experienced. Keep doing your thing, and of course, go Hawks. P.S. Here's a raise from 1 to 5.
All right, go Hawks. You know what? The raise makes up for the fact that he was dodging us. That's cool.
I'm still a little bit bummed, though, because had he showed up and met with us, I could have given him his patch in person.
Right.
Rather than now I have to mail it.
Well, in a way, now you're creating jobs for the Postal Service. So
sure.
It's good.
Keeping them employed.
Absolutely.
Even overseas jobs.
Sure. Yeah. You're a global job creator.
Well, one more note to our members of the flock. If you are 12 and above, get me your audio of your name, your town, and the school you represent. Because at the end of the first show of the month, we do a little audio tribute for our members at 12 and above. So, you know, let us know who you are, where you're from, and the school that you want to rep.
Yeah. You've only had 3-4 months to get this done now. And if you still haven't, like, all right, slacker, we see you.
You can send it in with your voice memo on your phone to our email, gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. You could leave a message at 253-235-9041.
Lots of ways to do it.
Lots of ways.
Get it done. No more excuses.
I don't think we have any excuses for some of the kinds of tape that we forgot. I knew this was going to get feedback from the last show, but we forgot electrical tape.
That one I was ashamed of.
We forgot gaffer tape, which...
That one not as ashamed of.
Double-sided scotch tape.
That one I'm slightly ashamed of because... was it Rebecca who... Becca, she brought that up,
yeah,
right? The double-sided scotch tape. Yeah, so when I did wedding photography for a number of years, one of the things I'd carry in my little bridal commando kit was double-sided scotch tape. Because there's a lot of things, especially on strapless dresses... That, like, to kind of keep things in and
You
know, tucked away where it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
Like the double-sided scotch tape was invaluable. So that was a oversight for sure.
And then the one oversight for me, the kind of tape I always carried in my golf bag, athletic tape.
Well, I mean, that's more or less gaffer's tape, right? Like they're close. They're kind of that fabric-y kind of tape.
No, it's not fabric-y at all.
Athletic tape?
Yeah.
Are you talking more like the gauzy tape?
No, not the gauze type tape. It's just that white tape that you wrap around so you don't get blisters on your fingers.
That is clothy.
It's not that clothy.
You don't know the cloth factor of tape, apparently. Like, you don't have a good sense of that. No, I know Ron Pepper called me to task on forgetting gaffer's tape, having been a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And I take offense because the reason I don't think of gaffer's tape as a photographer, I don't like gaffer's tape. It's too stretchy. Like, why use gaffer's tape when I can use duct tape, which is stronger and more water resistant? Gaffer's tape is a worthless tape. I don't like gaffer's tape.
The other one that I'm not sad about leaving off is plumber's tape. Like, that's a very specific purpose.
It's not. Well, and that's how I feel about the electrical tape, to be honest.
Okay.
Like, it's really only good for one use, and that's literally electrical stuff. Because, again, it's a stretchiness factor.
Mm-hmm.
It's got way too much stretch to it. Electrical tape is often frustrating when used outside of electrical work.
Yeah, I can't think of any other reason why you'd use it.
It's the only tape on hand?
Yeah, that's about it.
That's it. All right, I'm glad we settled that.
Yeah.
And I'm glad all you little flockers enjoyed tape talk as much as we apparently did. So,
the only one out of all those tapes that you'd even put above, because what was it, packing tape was kind of what, the Dalton line of tape?
Well, I think we put packing tape at the very bottom. Like, it's the Bortles level of tape.
I don't know.
I hate packing tape.
Yeah, you do hate packing tape. So what's the Dalton line for tape? Scotch tape?
Yeah, or masking tape.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Like, masking tape would be Matt Ryan, and then scotch tape would be Dalton.
Okay.
You know, just that mediocre quarterback. Mediocre tape.
A couple comments from our folks out there on YouTube this past week. Gianna Sherman says, hey, I'm a 22-year-old girl, and I agree with Adam. It's not just older men who like defensive football. So
that's a good point.
Tiana,
that's a good
pointing
point.
Out that curmudgeons don't have to be old.
Right. An example I could give for that is my daughter the other day just went off on a rant. I don't remember what it was about, but it totally, like, her inner 96-year-old curmudgeon just, like, popped out and yelled at somebody to get off their lawn. And I was like, there's my daughter. Like, so you don't have to be a white old man to be a curmudgeon. You can indeed be a young lady and still have that curmudgeony, defensive-minded football in you. And I appreciate Tiana for speaking up for all of those that agree with me in that realm. So
all of the curmudgeons banding together.
Yeah.
Another note here says, how do my dudes feel on this Cowboys trading a first-rounder for Cooper? Earl wasn't worth a premium pick, and now this? What the
catfish?
Jones? He says, P.S., this is the best show I've heard in over a year of listening, commenting on our last show. I like them all, but this one is aces.
Interesting, because that was one I felt often, that that he would have enjoyed it that much. So that's awesome. Glad to know that even when I'm not firing all cylinders, it's working. But
I was about to put Jones in my do better this week for just the entire idea that, you know, here we have Earl Thomas. And
these don't even compare.
Not worthy of trading another number one pick for.
Absolutely not.
Or even maybe number two, a second rounder.
This cracked me up when I started seeing this comment pop up over and over again on different message boards and that sort of thing. The idea that how did the Cowboys not give a first for Earl, but they'll give a first for Cooper? Well, how old is Earl Thomas?
Yeah, well, it's a different dude. I don't think it was necessarily
how many
the
times,
it's a
how many
first.
Times has Earl Thomas had a season derailed because of a leg break? What position does Earl Thomas play? Safety. What position does Amari Cooper play? Receiver. As you get older, it's harder to stay in the league as a safety than as receiver. And Amari Cooper's 6 years younger than he is. Like, I don't understand how people like equivocate those two players at all.
Oh, you don't understand that at all? You're baffled by it?
I'm baffled.
One's going to be, you know, has a clear shot at being a Hall of Famer, and one guy still has a chance at being an average receiver.
You're way too down on Amari Cooper.
Average. He's the Matty Ice of receivers.
I don't know. He's a lot better than that. He just needs to get out of that dysfunction that is the Oakland Raiders. He had an offensive coordinator in a system that worked really well, and then they fired him after Derek Carr had an MVP caliber season.
Yeah.
And it's an Amari Cooper problem, sure.
And now he gets to go to that great Cowboys offensive system.
Hey, man, it's better than the Raiders system.
That Jason Garrett offense, the vaunted Jason Garrett offense.
Look, I'm not looking for Amari Cooper to put up big numbers. What I'm looking for is Amari Cooper to provide a threat to get that eighth man out of the box so Ezekiel Elliott can be a better running back and more effective. If he can just do that, if he can increase Zeke's yards per carry by a yard, like, that's a huge difference in that Cowboys offense. People always look at production from a guy from a fantasy perspective because they want yards and TDs and all that. How does he affect the game? And I think that's something that can't be measured by stats, and Amari Cooper's presence will actually do that for the Cowboys.
Well, more Amari Cooper talk if you tune into this week's Pick'em show. GetInTheFlock.com.
Absolutely. Yeah, GetInTheFlock.com. Listen to that show and tell me why I'm so right and Brandon's still so wrong about this. That'd be great. Email in.
And you'll still be in the minority, which is fine.
Hey, man.
On to do better and better at life.
All right, man.
My do better this week. I finally made the switch, Adam. I've been with Verizon for a long time, and I've always been opposed to this idea of their unlimited data plans, but they got me. They offered me a discount I couldn't pass up. And part of this idea of going to unlimited data, it's with the wording. Like I've vehemently opposed to the use of the term unlimited when it's clearly limited. And I think Russell Wilson would back me up on this as Mr. Unlimited, that, you know, when you pick a data plan and you say, oh yeah, it's unlimited, with all of these caveats that we decide to limit you on, that doesn't count as unlimited. So for Verizon, even though you've got me, I'm still not on board with your particular use of the English language. Do better.
So Verizon, you've been sucked in by Verizon. You're not leaving Verizon. Am I getting that right?
I'm not leaving. No, I was on one of their by the gig plans.
Uh-huh.
And then I went over and I called in and they said, oh, well, we're giving veterans discounts now for our unlimited plans. And so it made my phone bill cheaper.
Well, that's interesting. See, this is something I haven't worried much about because with the type of business my dad runs, like he has like the monster unlimited, like old school plan that's like grandfathered in, uh-huh. like without any of the you know, crappy language you're talking about, and right. like random
it's actually
limitations.
Unlimited.
It's like legitimately unlimited. And so I've been paying to stay on that plan for like the past 5-6 years. And I hope we hold on to that like as long as humanly possible because it's pretty great.
Well, good for you.
Instead,
I'm on the limited plan.
I can see how the hypocrisy there would really rub you the wrong way. I get it.
Yeah.
It does feel like the cell phone people are hustlers like used car salesmen.
And not only that, so they have different tiers of unlimited and they name them differently.
That's like saying there's different values of infinity.
Right. You have regular infinity, infinity yeah. plus, and infinity yeah. plus plus.
Infinity, infinity plus?
Right. It's like when you're arguing with your kid.
And I squared.
And you know, you try and one-up each other.
Right.
And then the first one says infinity, and then the other goes, well, infinity plus one. Well, infinity right. plus infinity.
Yeah. No, you always punch the infinity plus one guy, you just need to punch in the face.
Don't punch him in the face.
All right, man. Might do better this week. Is for ESPN's Week 8 power rankings. And I think it's Aaron Schwartz. I think it's one of the PFF guys. The last name's Schwartz. They don't give him the full name at the end of his little write-up on the Seahawks. But this is what he writes regarding the Seahawks, who they clock in at 16 going into Week 8 here. And they rank in their write-up, they're saying they're giving you a description of which player needs to do more for their team for them to go further. And this is what he writes. They need more from QB Russell Wilson. Wilson is on pace for the lowest total QBR of his career, as he is recording just 218 passing yards per game. With the Seahawks ranking 7th in rushing yards per game after being in the bottom 10 last season, now it's time for Wilson to step up for a Seahawks team that ranks 5th worst in passing yards per game, ahead of only the Cowboys, Titans, Cardinals, and Bills.
Schwartz. Wow.
You're an idiot. And you, Mr. Schwartz, the guy that's obviously a stats nerd, right? And somehow you're fixated on freaking passing yards. How many times do I have to call people to task on this? The guy's having an amazingly efficient year at the quarterback position, and when the team runs it down the other team's throat, running the football, and has fewer pass attempts, therefore fewer passing yards, but yet is still very efficient and throwing for touchdowns, somehow you need more out of him. Passing yards don't fucking matter, Schwartz. Okay? Do better. God, I can't wait for people to get this through their thick skulls.
Yeah, that game by the Thursday night game where Deshaun Watson had 5 touchdowns, but he was clearly outplayed by Brock Osweiler, who threw for 241 yards in that game. Oh, it's right. It's so bad that Deshaun Watson at 239 yards, it's that he was so outplayed by the quarterback on the other side of the ball who had 2 more yards.
Exactly.
I mean, we know there's a difference, right, between Deshaun Watson completing 16 of 20 passes for 239 yards versus Brock Osweiler, who needed 37 attempts to make 21 completions. Like, that's a pretty significant difference. And I don't look at Russell Wilson over the last few games and go, oh, you know what? Yeah, he's just been playing terrible.
Yeah,
we need more out of Russell Wilson.
Going 17 for 23 for only 222 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. he's playing terribly. Oh wait, did I gloss over something important? Three touchdowns?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Like, start judging quarterback play by actual quarterback play and not fantasy stats. Yards don't matter when it comes to passing yards. It is an empty stat.
In his three wins this year, he's had 192 yards, 172 yards, and 222 yards. And in any of those games where they won, did you think, oh, yeah, Russell Wilson needed to do more for the team in those games?
Huh, no. I didn't get that sense. I must not know how to watch football, Brandon.
And then in his two best performances, where he throws for 298 yards against the Broncos, 226 yards against the Bears, what were we saying out of those games? Why didn't the Seahawks run the ball more?
Is Russell Wilson trying to do too much? Is he holding on to the ball too long? Like, I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
Can't find the sweet spot in this one.
Oh, no, we found the sweet spot. We just need everybody else to catch up and understand.
Well, someone who does understand the universe and the world around us, it's Funko. They're my better at life this week for creating Golden Girls cereal. This cereal is so popular that they can't even keep it on the shelves at Target. You go on eBay and there's people trying to sell the Golden Girls cereal, which actually includes a collectible toy member of the Golden Girls inside the box of cereal. And these are going for $10 to $25 on eBay. It's unfortunate that I don't have these in my particular town. So if you're on the lookout for me, I will be happy. I have some extra boxes of Baldwin Smacks. I'm looking to make a trade. So Baldwin Smacks for Golden Girls cereal.
And are you sure you're not overpaying with Baldwin Smacks? I mean, that's almost like giving up a first.
Baldwin Smacks are in no way relatable to the Amari Coopers of cereal.
So Baldwin Smacks are clearly Honey Smacks, right? Like repackaged and rebranded, right? Yeah. Okay. And the Golden Girls cereal has to be Golden Grahams, right?
You would think so, but they're actually kind of a blue Cheerio type thing.
Your mom's a blue Cheerio. What do you mean they're blue Cheerios? You can't. No.
Doesn't it make sense that the Golden Girl cereal would be blue?
Sure.
But for Funko, for creating what might be the greatest cereal out there on the market right now, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I had no idea that the Golden Girls would play such a prominent role in my life at this stage still. Like, involved with the show here. It's great. And I love how everybody else has latched onto it, too. Well, I love how you've embraced it, too.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard I was really disappointed this last week. I was listening to local Seattle radio and they were interviewing Mike Leach of the Cougars, the coach for the Washington State Cougars.
Mm-hmm.
He almost landed in my do better because he called the Golden Girls overrated.
Ooh.
But then he went on to say that he never really watched the show. So, wow. I mean, that's like Schwartz doing his power rankings of the Seahawks, like just looking at the stats. Like, did he just see a preview and look and see that, you know, it was a show about ladies in their 50s and 60s and just said that show's not for me?
Right. Must be overrated.
It's not overrated. It's one of the greatest shows of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. He needs to reevaluate his old-timey TV rankings.
Friends and Golden Girls, two of the greatest shows of all time.
Yeah? Okay, so where would you put Seinfeld in there?
Am I power ranking great sitcoms now?
It's the great sitcoms of the 90s?
Golden Girls was 80s, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, then you got to put Cheers in there if you're doing right. 80s sitcoms, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, Cheers was always lower for me.
Yeah, Full House has to get in there.
See, during the times, you know, in the 90s, you know, Friends was number one. But see, now Golden Girls is kind of edged up. And maybe it's just later in my years. I don't know.
I don't know.
How do you see, it's like ranking quarterbacks. It's like saying who's a top tier quarterback. It's like, well, it kind of depends on what stage of your career you're at.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right. Well, something to think about then. I know yards don't matter for that either. Yeah. So
yeah, just like TV ratings don't matter.
There you go. Exactly.
It can be a great show and have TV ratings that were not that great.
You know what does matter though, Brandon? Science. And I'm really excited about my announcement for Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week, because my Better at Life is for NASA, because they thought outside the, well, they didn't really think outside the box. They used a trick that every one of us has used to try to fix an electronic piece of equipment at one time or another. And they used it on the Hubble Space Telescope. Now, I think I had brought up on the show that the Hubble was kind of in trouble because you need three gyroscopes going at the same time to orient the thing. Like, that's what keeps it pointed the right direction.
Yeah.
And since the shuttles went out of service back in the 2000s, like, we haven't had anything to go up there and fix gyroscopes because they go bad. It's a bunch of moving parts, and there were six on it, and they were down to three, and then one went bad. And they were like, oh, crap, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And they were like, well, first the idea was, well, if we can't get it going, then we'll just run off one gyroscope, because one or two doesn't really matter. We'll save the second good one to use as a one gyroscope situation later on, and we'll try to extend the life out.
Mm-hmm.
But then they decided, well, maybe we should just try some basic resets here. So what's the first thing they did?
They turned it on and off.
That's right.
No, that's what you always try first.
Yeah, no dice. But it was a good try.
It's the Jurassic Park method, I think, is what people refer to that now.
Okay.
Because isn't that what let all the dinosaurs out in the movie Jurassic Park, was shutting down the computer to turn it back on?
Oh, the original one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think Newman did that, didn't he?
Yeah.
But so they tried shutting it off and on. No dice. Well, then they thought to themselves, well, what else do you do in situations like this? Well, you give it a whack. You get a little bump. See if you can't get it going. So what they did was, is they found one of the other gyroscopes that had gone offline previously, but thought maybe somehow they could get it going again. And they performed some really high speed ish maneuvers to kind of jar it loose. And guess what? It worked. Hubble's back on three gyroscopes. Going to be transmitting more mind-blowing images that help increase our understanding of the universe. And to NASA, for giving Hubble a whack, you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
So you have your three tried and true methods. You have turn it off, turn it back on.
Right.
Give it a whack.
Yeah.
And jiggle the handle.
And jiggle. Yep. Yeah. And hey, without a way to get to space on our own, which we don't have right now, just so everybody knows, like, we got to hitch rides with Russia, which is stupid. You got, this is what you have left in your arsenal to try to fix your space assets.
Uh-huh.
Jiggle the handle, flip the switch on and off, and give it a whack. That's where we're at now.
That's where we're at.
Yeah. Well, that's not fun NASA anymore. That's for sure. They have too much money.
Well, they're still solving problems, and good for science. Coming through. Yeah,
you like it. You like the that NASA has been relegated to MacGyver skills, basically. Tactics. Yeah,
they're still doing other stuff too, though.
Yeah. Oh, the space station's falling apart. Hey, do they have any tube socks? and a little Gorilla tape, because we know that's the best tape. Like, that's all it'll take to hold that thing together.
Gorilla tape, back to back episodes, getting the shout out for best tape.
Absolutely. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.